So from this place, what the Lord is speaking to us is our need for him, for Breezy and I. So let's hop in. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And I think this is one of the most misunderstood of the Beatitudes in Matthew 5 and the character of Jesus. And I believe it's probably the most important aspect of the Beatitudes in our walk with Jesus. And so how do we get in a place that requires everything from us and nothing from us? So the most pivotal theological shift in my walk with Christ happened in the wake of reading Compelled by Love by Dr. Heidi Baker, who founded Iris Ministries, Iris Global, and now lives in Mozambique. And the book walks through her journey of she was encountered at a young age. She went into the mission field. She went overseas. They built orphanages, her and her husband, and then ended up in Mozambique. At the time, in the 90s, the most dangerous country in the world. They showed up. And what she explains is that she was called to Mozambique, not for what she could do for the hurting and broken, but what for the poor and the hurting and broken could do for her, to learn and to receive from the poor, not go and save them. And the Lord spoke to her when she arrived is that the purpose to learn from the poor is to be poor in spirit, because there's something about those who have nothing understand not having anything and relying completely on the Lord. And when I read this book, it was a time of explosive spiritual growth in my life, in this body, in our youth. And it was also a time of deep hunger for the word, and also my family was walking through a situation with my dad of a terminal cancer diagnosis, and so struggling with, there's great reward in the spirit, and there's great battle in the flesh, and the Lord is just encountering my heart because I needed him for everything. And so I was asking the Lord one night after I read this book, and I said, Lord, it would be awesome if there was just a way you could connect me with Heidi Baker over in Mozambique, and I could just go and I could just sit under her for a couple of months, learn from her, and learn how to be poor in spirit. And that was just my prayer. And I remember it was into winter because there was not a lot going on with my friends, and so I had a lot of time to pray. And I hopped on a Skype with one of my friends from IHOP that we did an internship together. And we were just talking, catching up. And she says, Rory, she says, do you know who Heidi Baker is? I said, yeah, I know who Heidi Baker is. She says, there's a school that I just found out about. You go in the summer, you spend a couple of months, and you basically just sit under her. And she literally said the exact prayer that I'd been praying to the Lord for the past few months. And she says, and I'm going. And I'm so excited. And she's like, and so I told her the story about me praying. And so on December 28th, 2010, it was like 10 o'clock at night. I finally applied for the school. And a few weeks later, little did I know that my best friend, my partner in crime, Ryan Searle, applied for the exact same school without us knowing it. And so two guys from Pagosa found out about the school in Mozambique, and we applied and we went. And a lot of you guys know just the story of my dad, and there's a lot of stories within this time from December 28th to the end of the school, and even past that school. That's how we met Neil. I mean, there's so much fruit that came from 2011, and so much heartache, and we'll get into those things in another time. But when I was in Mozambique with Ryan, there were two things that Heidi would say when she would teach. There's two phrases that really stuck with me. And one was stop for the one. She even has a book about it. And what that meant for her is that whoever the Lord was putting in front of her no matter how much was going on, she would have assistants pulling her this way and this way. Hey, Heidi, we got to get to this meeting. But the Lord fell, and it actually happened to me once as I was walking into class. She was walking with her entourage, and she stops, and she looks at me, and she encounters the Lord inside of me, not who I said I was, not what I was going through, but who the Lord said I was. And just her piercing blue eyes were just fully engaged, and I've never seen a human be fully engaged with another human so just in a moment. And then when the Lord was done in that moment, she went back. And then her entourage moved on. And it was the craziest thing I've ever experienced. And I'm like, that's what I want. I want to be fully engaged to stop wherever you're leading me. So that was kind of a side note. The next one was she would always say, both and more, Lord. Both and more. And in that moment, the first time I heard that phrase, sitting in class in a hut in Mozambique, Africa, it changed how I viewed the Lord. And she used it in the context of he is both this and that, but not only this or that, he's this and that and more than that because we can't comprehend who he is. He is loving and good, and he's a judge who destroys. He's both and more. He's not an either or. He's not an Old Testament God and a New Testament God. He's a both and so much more that we haven't even encountered. He's mercy, and he has holiness as well that can't interact with sin. And he requires everything, and he requires nothing from us. So going back to poor in spirit, let's break down poor in spirit into three aspects this morning. And the first one is who God is in being poor in spirit. And the second is the practicals in a right heart posture. And the last is who are we in the fullness of being poor in spirit. So there's a popular song by Elevation Worship, Maverick City Music. It's called Gyra. And it's a song that a lot of us in this body, it's kind of been an anthem this year of an anthem of surrender to the Lord in our lives. And when the Lord moves, he moves corporately. So there's this idea of we're all, you know, encountering this song of Gyra, which Jehovah Jireh means God will provide. And it's out of Genesis 22, and we don't have to turn there, but basically this is when Abraham, he finally gets the promise that he's been working on his whole life. He's been praying for a son, and he finally receives his son Isaac. And the Lord says, go, sacrifice him on the mountain. And there was a shift, I believe, in Abraham where he says, all right, this is like you have supplied everything to me, and I will give it all back simply because you asked me. And so obviously there's a lot more to this story, but he was asked to lay down the fulfillment of the promises of God as a sacrifice and to spend everything that was given to him rightly. He earned that rightly because of a promise from the Lord. And the Lord could have provided on top of that. He is a lot bigger than that, but he required, give me everything and see what happens. And so what Abraham did, in my opinion, is he became voluntarily poor. So he had everything that he wanted, the promises, the thing that he was seeking life after, and the Lord said, lay it down. He says, great, I will voluntarily be poor so that I can have you. And so Jehovah Jireh shows up in that moment and stops right before the promise was the light was put out, and he says, here, I have supplied everything that you need. I just needed to know that you are willing to give me everything. And so Jehovah Jireh in our life, he requires everything and nothing. So everything, he will shake everything that can be shaken. In Hebrews 12, and we can turn to this one. So in Hebrews 12, 27, I know I heard like a gasp. We just went through a lot of weeks of Hebrews this year, so don't worry. It'll be real quick. So in Hebrews 12, 27, and actually let's start in 26. And I apologize to all the teachers out there. I am not a teacher, so I'm just going to kind of take these and mold them into my message instead of, you know, how Justin does it. So this is referring back, to Haggai 2. So, whose voice then shook the earth, but now he, speaking of the Lord, has promised, saying, yet once more I shake not only the earth, but also the heaven. Now this, yet once more, indicates the removal of those things that are being shaken, as of things that are made, that the things which cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with the reverence of and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. And so when he asked everything, so a great example of that for this church, or really the church worldwide, is COVID and how it impacted, it shook the church. And there were a lot of churches that it shook a lot of things in there, and it should have just been left dead. Because that's what the Lord is calling. When there is a shaking and it fully shakes, leave those things behind and cling onto those that remain. That the Lord remains in us. So he wants all of those things that can be shaken, and he will shake everything that can be shaken, either voluntarily or by force, because he is jealous for us. He is a consuming fire, and he will shake everything. And what the Lord wants to shake and what he wants to remain is going to be him, and we'll know that. There's not going to be a guessing of what the Lord is going to remain, because he is jealous for us. He's jealous for those things. And the things that are getting in the way are the things that are being shaken, at least in my life. Those are the things that the Lord wants. He's going to shake them. He's going to get them loose. He's going to pull them out. The rot in our mouth, the tooth is the thing that moves. Get that thing out of there, because it's going to kill the body. So he requires everything from us. And then the nothing. So John 17, 24. Father, I desire that they also who you gave me may be with me where I am, that they may behold by my glory which you have given me, for you loved me before the foundation of the world. And so Jesus' desire is to be with us and just be with us. After everything is taken away, he says, okay, now nothing. I just want you to be. Don't strive, just be with me. And so I think we break these things into, we either have to work, or we have to sit in. It's a both and it's a more. It's a both and it's a more. He wants everything, he wants nothing, and then he wants everything on top of that. And so Jehovah Jireh, God will provide. He is able to take care of us. He is able in the poorness of our spirit, in the broken down of our bodies or our spirits or our souls, he is able to take care of us. He is strong enough. And so I believe that there are practical ways for us to get into this mindset and this spirit of being poor. And so what I'm going to talk about for the practicals is the spiritual disciplines. And depending on who you read or who you listen to, the amount of spiritual disciplines will vary a little bit. And so for me, I've broken them down into 7 spiritual disciplines. And the reason that I have kind of locked into these are all things that are required to do corporately as a body and privately as a son and daughter of God. Because the spiritual disciplines, they produce a heart that needs the Lord. So spiritual discipline, number one, and this is by no means in order of importance. This is just how I wrote them down. So number one is worship. And this church, this body is very, I love that we have a heart of worship here. It's a very easy thing for us to say, yeah, got that one. Corporate worship, private worship, we're in. Okay? And so what worship does, it positions our heart to become poor in spirit through a consistent worship life, because worship is gazing upon the one who provides. So when we worship the King. We praise the King, and our hearts are come alive because it's like, yes, I'm connected to this one, and you're the one I need. Number two is education and study of the Word. And some spiritual disciplines, guys that have lists, they'll just say reading your Bible. And I will push against that a little bit, because if we just read our Bible and we get our own view of the word and we don't listen to anybody else, that's not what the Lord intended. He intended for us to be in community. And so he might give me a piece of the word, and he's going to give Justin a piece of the other word. And he's going to give every single one of us a little piece of the word. And so if we're not listening to each other, if we're not studying one another, or the people that are spending time reading books that the Lord is encountering, we're not going to have a fullness of what the Lord is speaking. And so those two things together are very important. And filling your mind and heart with the word of the Lord makes your hunger deeper. Like the more you eat, the more you want. The more you eat, the more you want. And so there's a hunger that comes up inside of us where it's like, God, I need you. I am in need of you. So number one, worship. Two, studying the word. Three, life groups and confession. And the reason I say those two things, so one is community, and we'll call them life groups. In 2017, Breezy and I came back from Oklahoma, and we took over our small group program here at Restoration. And as we were creating the curriculum, we realized something super interesting. When we had people consistently over to our house, that we had to clean every single week. And it just was like never ending. It's like, well, we cleaned last week. Well, we got to do it again. And so what we found is our house stayed so much cleaner when we invited people into it. And it wasn't like every single week we threw stuff in the closet. It was like, oh man, we got to deal with that closet stuff too. And so every week it got a little cleaner and a little cleaner until it was easy. We mopped the floors real quick, and because it was like we kept our life to a standard, because it's like, man, someone could walk through that door at any moment and I got to have this stuff cleaned up. And so we also realize that is the same thing if we allow people in the context of life groups or community, that we confess, that we open ourselves up, we're going to get clean every single week. But if you keep throwing stuff in the closet, it's just going to stay dirty and it's probably going to get moldy and it's going to get worse. So there's a choice in, but the first part is surround yourself with people who can listen. The second is confess your sins to one another. And what that does, to be willingly vulnerable before your brothers and sister, it makes you realize that you are in need. The more that you callous over and push down, you're like, I got it. I'm good. I can do this on my own. I can push through. I can do this. But if you keep saying, this is a consistent struggle of mine, and I need you. And all of a sudden, it's like, and I'm going to need you next week. And it's not like one and done. I need you, great. All right, we're going to move on. It's next week. Hey, man, I'm struggling again, and I need you. And so it creates a neediness and a poverty in community. But we have to choose to say, yes, I will submit myself to you, and you can submit yourself to me, and I'll take your stuff, and you can take my stuff. And we're going to grow together in the Lord and in being poor in spirit. Number four is praying corporately and privately. And praying is partnering with the Lord and leaning on him. And so as we're having those conversations with the Lord, there is a conversation kind of like your community group, your life group, that you're doing that. All of a sudden, the more you open up to the Lord and the Lord opens up to you, there's a need for the Father. But it's not like I am holding on to you and this is it. It's a give and take. It's a both and more. Number five is Sabbath. And Ryan did an awesome message on rest a few weeks ago. If you haven't heard that, I would highly recommend that. There's a lot of really great practicals. But what Sabbath does as a spiritual discipline is it takes away from all the distractions, especially in the Western culture of we're working for more money, more stuff. It's a hustle. You know, whoever hustles the most wins. But when we choose to say, Lord, I'm going to just sit before you. I'm going to rest with my family. I'm going to be restful and I'm going to be worshipful today, this day that I've set aside for you. And as a culture, it's like, well, what do you mean you're not going to do anything today? Like there's stuff to do. There's, you know, there's clients to meet. There's blah, blah, blah. And when we give of ourselves, again, we make our need in the Lord, that he is a supplier of our strength. instead of, man, it'd be awesome if I had one more day. It'd be awesome if I had a few more hours and I didn't have to sleep as much. But no, the Lord will exponentially grow your time when you encounter him willingly in the place of rest. Number six is generous giving and stewardship. This is a very easy one to grasp for being poor in spirit. The more you give of yourself, of your finances, of your time through the Lord, and I'm gonna say that this is the most important thing. If your brother is saying, Rory, God told me to give all my income away and sell my house and I'm gonna live in a tent. Awesome. He listened to the Lord and he became poor in the flesh so he can counter poor in the spirit. For me, it might be completely something, and for the next person, it might be completely something different. And so the capacity that you have to give of yourself, of your finances, has to come from the Lord first. And so as we're living these things through, if you're just picking one of these, it's not gonna work. We have to do all of these together. And I'm not saying tomorrow, create your to-do list and you better get on this. It's let the Lord work through you in these spiritual disciplines. But you can't have one without the others. So the last one, which I know is our favorite one, fasting. I love fasting. Brian loves fasting. It's something that if you take away the sustenance of your body, you don't have anything else. Every time it's like, man, I could really use a hamburger right now. Boom, where's the Lord at? Man, I am really, where's the Lord at? And it makes you automatically, when you break down your physical body, you need him more than anything. Of Lord, I need sustenance. And I'm gonna push against something that I think has become very popular the last few decades, and it's, well, I can't fast from food because, oh, I can't fast, I'm gonna fast from Facebook. That is bull honky. The Lord calls us to fast and feast. Okay, both things. We're not, okay, when we get together, we're all gonna feast on Facebook. No, like what he calls you to fast is what he calls you to feast. And so whatever that thing is, that's it. It was like, well, Rory, man, I work a construction job and I gotta get to work and I need my energy. It's like, great. Is the Lord calling you to it or am I forcing you into it? Well, the Lord said, that's it. It's done. If the Lord is calling you into fasting, he will be the supplier of your strength, not your wisdom. It's like, well, Saturday would be a lot better day to fast than in the middle of the week. What is the Lord calling you into? He's calling you to something that requires something. And I'm going to say that again because I think the Lord just brought it up to me. Whatever you feast, that's the thing that you fast, okay? Together, corporately. And in worship practice today, Ryan was talking about Matthew 4:4 and Deuteronomy 8. And this is the phrase of, actually here, let me just turn that over there real quick to Matthew 4. So when Jesus comes out of the wilderness fasting for 40 days, what he said is, it is written that man shall not live by bread alone, but every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. So what he has done, which is, it's very obvious, that he's broken down, even as God, Jesus is God. Man, I can't live by the sustenance of this earth, but by the word of God. I need him as well. And so Jesus himself even comes out of that needing the Lord. He is poor in spirit walking out of that, which is what the Beatitudes are. We are looking at Jesus of who he is in his character and saying, I want that too. Blessed are you that are poor in spirit. And so again, all of these things, it's something that we have to focus on corporately. Okay, if we're all, and it's very clear, like I'm not gonna get up here and say, guys, I just fasted for 40 days and I'm feeling real spiritual and real. There is a consistency of fasting throughout. There is a consistency of meeting together, of reading the word, of worshiping. I mean, are you guys hearing this? Like, this is all stuff that we're doing, but are we doing it to the best of our abilities through what the Lord is speaking to us? So we're in Mozambique, and so we're one of the international, we're a guest there, okay? So we're living on the base. It's rough. We got to do the squatty potties. We eat rice and beans every single day. We're communing with the local pastors, okay? So we're trying to live as much as we can with them. And so it's funny. I reread the book after I got back from Mozambique, and Heidi has this one line in Compelled by Love, and she says, when we send our international visitors home from Mozambique, we always pray that they take home the riches of the poor, because as Matthew 5:3 says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And many ask why Jesus reserves the kingdom of God for the poor in spirit. Why is it the wealthiest people and the cultures experience fewer miracles? And something about the poor that delights the heart of God. Oh, I'm sorry. And experience fewer and less of the supernatural. So why do the wealthiest people and cultures experience the fewest miracles and less of the supernatural? What does it mean to be poor in spirit? There is something about the poor that delights the heart of God. They are contrite. They know their need for him. But what is it about them that draws the kingdom of God to earth? To answer this lies in their dependency, their hunger, their need, and their desperation. So we walked away from those experiences of a third world. And like, man, they have nothing. They're like, we saw kids wearing water bottles for shoes. But they'll walk up to a blind man and see him healed like that. And we saw it over and over, and we're like, what is going on? Like we've all been through Bible training and this kid just found out about the Lord. And he's over here doing miracles because he knows his need. There's a desperation of, I don't even have shoes today. I think if I ask the Lord for something, he's going to supernaturally break in. He, being poor in spirit, draws out the supernatural. All right, now this is getting into my favorite part. So who are we in this, beloved? So the importance of this is, I didn't fully understand until I really started diving in this. So Song of Solomon 8:5. Who is that coming up from the wilderness, leaning on her beloved? And this is from a relative looking on to the Shulamite as she's coming from the wilderness. Who is this? I awakened you under the apple tree. There your mother brought you forth. There she who bore you brought you forth. And so this is a relative looking in. She's leaning on her beloved. The Shulamite turns to her beloved. Set me as a seal upon your heart, a seal upon your arm, for love is as strong as death, jealousy as cruel as the grave. And this book is weird. Song of Solomon is weird. It's prophetic. It's poetic. There's different ways to look at it. But this passage to me has always been a picture of the bride when Jesus returns. And not as a mighty warrior beside her groom, but as a lovesick bride, we as a church, that is fully surrendered to her love in strength. And I believe that us as the bride, or the church, is being called into full reliance on him. And that's kind of like a no-brainer, okay? Of course we are. So let's dive deeper into this. In Revelation 2, the two churches that Jesus has nothing against, okay, out of the seven that he's talking to, writes a letter to, are the churches of Smyrna and the church of Philadelphia. And those are the two that were steeped in persecution. There was persecution on them. They had nothing except the Lord, okay? All they had was Jesus. All they had was our jealous groom. Persecution wiped every distraction away, and all they had was Jesus. Jesus, our king. And so a king has a kingdom. And when a king gets a bride, she becomes a queen. Then she gets the kingdom as well. Okay? Right? Am I losing anybody there? Okay, we got it. Kings marry a girl. She becomes a queen. She gets all the kingdom. Awesome. It's every girl's dream. Get a crown, get a throne, get a kingdom. Awesome. Pretty dress. So let's go back to Matthew 5. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So where else does it say that? There's two Beatitudes that say the same thing. as far as what they receive. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And then a few verses later, it says, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And so the kingdom of heaven is for the poor in spirit bride. At the end of Revelation, it says, and the spirit and the bride say, come. At that moment, when the bride and the spirit are united, it says, come, then he comes. He's talking about this, that we as the bride are to be poor in spirit for the Lord to come back. If we are wanting the Lord to come back, this is the posture of our heart. The heart of the bride is to be poor in spirit. Is, Lord, I need you and I am in need of you. It's like, well, Rory, that's the same thing. It's not the same thing. I recognize my need for you today. I need you to breathe. I need you to wake up. I need you to get up here and to talk. But I also understand my need. It's not going to end when I get an encounter today from the Lord. It's tomorrow I'm going to be in need of you. The next day I'm going to be in need of you. And the next, and for all of eternity, I'm going to be in need of you. And he says, that's the bride I'm coming back for. She needs me. And once she realizes that all other lovers will fail her, everything else is stripped away, I'm coming back for that one that's ready to look on my face for eternity and say, that's it. I'm good. You're all I need. Everything else in me is nothing. I am in poverty. All of these are rags, but the riches of your presence is everything that I need. And so how I see it, and I feel like I've been struggling with this question for years, because I see this, I read in Revelation of the seven churches, I want to be the one that the Lord has nothing against. He has no correction. And it's like, but Lord, I live in Pagosa Springs, Colorado. There is not a lot of persecution going on. Most of our community are believers. How do I get to that place? And I believe the reason that these two phrases are in there, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who are persecuted, is the Lord is inviting us into the answer to that question. How do we have Jesus have nothing against it? We become poor in spirit. And the tools that the Lord has given us are the spiritual disciplines. If we engage in the spiritual disciplines, we will become poor in spirit. But the reason the Lord puts both of these in there, it says, one, you can choose me by breaking everything away in your life away, breaking away your need for money, for support, for food, for all of these things. Let me clothe you like I clothe the lilies of the field. Once that's broken completely away, you have then arrived. Or persecution will come, and then you can learn that. So he always gives us a choice. He's drawing us into it. Become poor in spirit before persecution, or persecution will either produce being poor in spirit or it will break you. He will shake everything that can be shaken, and what remains will remain. And that's a tough pill to swallow. It's like he wants everything, and then he wants nothing from us. He wants all of our life, all of our possessions. And then he wants us to just gaze on the beauty of his face for eternity. And I think that as we're walking through becoming more like him and engaging in that interaction with him, he will give us help. This is not something, again, that we have to do on our own. But we have to invite him in to our sphere. We have to let him take everything. Our finances, what we spend our time on, our bodies. And let him grow. So I'm going to have Ryan come up and play for a little bit. I'll have the elders come up. And I just want to do some ministry time and really just focus in on this of where are we at with the Lord? What is holding us back? What is he jealous for in our lives? him as the consuming fire, what can he take away so that we can be poor in spirit? And so, Jesus, we thank you that you always give us a choice. You always lay out a table before us and say, you can choose to eat. You can choose to be poor in spirit, but you're also jealous, and that you will do everything that is required to capture as many people as possible into yourself. And so I thank you for that, Lord, that we're good either way, but you're inviting us into the glory of your presence, the glory of your name, the glory of your character. Father, I ask that you would strip away and make us understand what you're stripping away. As you're shaking the nation, you're shaking the earth, you don't do things in a pinpointed area, you do things corporately. And I'm feeling, Lord, from talking to others throughout the earth in the church, that you're shaking the church right now to be poor in spirit. You want to strip everything away that is a hindrance to your presence. So Jesus, would you give us wisdom today to hear what you're saying to the church? What do you need to strip away? So guys, I just invite you, just we're spend 5 minutes or so, 10 minutes, and if this is engaging with your heart, come pray with one of these men. If you have somebody in your community that you want to pray with, but let's dive deep into allowing the Lord to strip away everything that can be taken.